Welcome to episode number 167 of the Average Man Podcast, Balls of Steel. And that is a ball tear of a track to bring us in. I needed something to kind of get me up for this today. So a bit of metal was just what the doctor ordered. What's going on? Let's start with a little bit of a rundown of some of the sporting events that have happened over the last few weeks and have a bit of chat about that. There's not much going on currently. The last night, the Kiwis did defeat the Kangaroos to become the Pacific champs in rugby league, which is a bit of a disappointment if you're an Aussie, and you're probably pumped if you're a Kiwi. It's kind of doubly disappointing if you're an Aussie though, because we really need to be winning the NRL, like the international stuff with the NRL, because we kind of, I wouldn't say suck, but we never win the rugby union stuff these days. It's all the All Blacks. So, you know, the Kiwis definitely beat us last night. That kind of sucks. It is always good to have, you know, to win the World Cup's important. Or to be Pacific champs is also pretty bloody important, because, you know, the Kiwis and the Aussies are the best in the world at NRL. And this year, the Kiwis are better than us. So that happened. What do we have last weekend? I didn't watch it, but I've been seeing, you know, clips of it and still shots of it and reading sort of breakdowns of it and listening to other people's opinions and whatnot of the Francis Ngannou versus Tyson Fury fight, boxing fight that happened last weekend. If you're not aware of what that is at all, Francis Ngannou left the UFC as the UFC heavyweight champion, sort of pretty widely considered to be the scariest UFC heavyweight champ of all time. He's a big African black dude who has got a crazy story about how he was working on sand mines in Cameroon as a kid, and he had to escape from the country, like literally escape across a desert. They had to swim across a small ocean. He kept getting picked up by Coast Guard and dropped back on the side of the ocean he didn't want to be on, until he finally got over to Morocco, I think it was, and then made his way to France. He started training. He wanted to be a boxer. Started training at a boxing gym in France, and they said, "Mate, I think you're better suited to mixed martial arts." You know, he was already like late 20s, I think, by the time he started doing this. So he went to a mixed martial arts gym and started training there. And within 5 years of getting to France and starting to train mixed martial arts, he was in the UFC, knocking everyone out. Knocked everyone out on the way up to a title shot. Got picked apart and wrestled and beaten over five rounds by the current champ at the time, who is one of the all-time greats in heavyweight in the UFC, which is Stipe Miocic. He's the most successful UFC heavyweight of all time, being like the people that he beat and the amount of times he defended his belt, which I think is only three times, which is super crazy. You get these guys in other weight divisions defending the belt like 11 times over multiple years. And three title defenses, so win the championship and then win three fights as champ, is the record in the UFC for the heavyweight champion. So that's pretty crazy. And then he lost that fight, went and I think he might have won his next fight, but it was shit. Then went on a tear and knocked out another few top contenders. Came back and fought Stipe again, and knocked him out in the second fight. Took the belt, and beat one other guy who was actually another French guy that he used to train with, beat that dude, and then retired because he wanted to take a boxing fight. And everyone thought he was crazy. Look, honestly, myself included, kind of thought he was throwing away his career. He was going to go over to boxing, get paid once, get knocked out, you know, ruin his legacy, something along those lines, because that's sort of how that is supposed to go. And the dude ends up going 10 rounds with Tyson Fury, who is, you know, can be argued that he is the greatest heavyweight of all time. He's certainly the greatest heavyweight of our generation, this side of the 2000s. You know, he took the belt off long-time champ. Blanking on his name. Long-time champ. Ukrainian fella. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. Vlad Klitschko. Yeah, Klitschko, Vladimir Klitschko. He's beat everybody else he's fought. He's never lost. He had one tie, one draw, where he beat another undefeated boxer. Oh, he tied with an undefeated boxer. They went to beat him two more times after that. The dude's like nearly 7 foot. He's like 6'9", I think. He's, you know, 400 pounds, whatever that is in I think he gets down a bit lower than that when he fights. But he's a huge man. He's absolutely massive. I'm not sure what that is in kilos, but the guy's he's a behemoth, big white guy from Manchester. He's a gypsy, super charismatic, super long, really good footwork, great boxer. And Francis Ngannou went 10 rounds with him, knocked him down in the third round. Some people say beat him up in multiple other rounds. And a lot of people, a lot of experts, a lot of professionals, a lot of people in the game are saying he should have won the fight, and that it's kind of just typical of boxing to give the nod to the actual boxer because they don't want to discredit their own sport. I don't know if that's true. I haven't seen it for myself, but you know, whether he should have won or not, the fact that he went that, it was that close and he knocked him down, it was that competitive, is a huge win on its own. It was his first ever professional boxing fight. So this is the same as when Conor McGregor went and fought Floyd Mayweather. It's exactly the same, but at heavyweight. You're talking about the best to ever do it, dominant champ versus the guy, first time he's ever fought in boxing, coming over from mixed martial arts. You know, Conor McGregor did well. It was competitive for a few rounds, and then it started to get, you know, run away from him, and he ended up getting stopped in the 10th. And this guy went the whole 10 rounds. A lot of people are saying he won, knocked down Tyson Fury. He's just cemented himself in combat sports immortality. And, you know, a lot of people, myself included, were saying this guy's asking too much. He's throwing away his career. It's a bad move. He's not going to make a mark in boxing. And he goes over there, and now they're talking about who his next boxing fight's going to be, if it's going to be a rematch or if it's going to be another top contender, Deontay Wilder. So super crazy, man. The only guy that really is in talks to fight him in mixed martial arts competitively at the moment is John Jones. Who's moved up to heavyweight now. So this guy's just absolutely crazy what he's done. And as a mixed martial arts fan, like, I'm a boxing fan too. I love boxing, but MMA is definitely my first love when it comes to combat sports. It'd be MMA, then Muay Thai, then boxing. For an MMA fan, it's so good to see us get one, because all these MMA guys have been going over to boxing and getting beaten. Conor McGregor was the only one that went over in his prime. All these other guys have gone over after retirement and had some sort of exhibition fights or some professional fights that just weren't competitive, and they've been losing. Nate Diaz was the most recent one, who lost to the YouTuber, blanking on his name, Logan Paul, not Logan Paul, the other one, the other Paul brother, which is just crazy, man. Jake Paul, that's him. So we've got one, even though he lost the fight, it's notched up as a win for MMA because of how competitive it was. And, you know, it definitely seems like Tyson Fury was just overlooking him and not taking it seriously. That's sort of bolstered by the fact that before this fight took place, he had booked his title defense against the lineal contender, the next guy who's an absolute beast as well, who may be Ukrainian or Russian or something. Another one of those cats from that Eastern European sort of block. He booked that fight in December before he had this November or late October date booked against Francis Ngannou. So that's kind of like the biggest insult you can get. I'm already booking my next title fight before I even fought the guy in front of me. And apparently at the start of the fight, he said, "You're about to get taken to school." And, you know, after Francis Ngannou went 10 rounds with him and knocked him down, he said to him, you are a shitty professor," which is pretty classic, man. And look, I'm a massive Tyson Fury fan. I'd like to see the rematch. I'd like to see him train for it properly and see how it goes. But, you know, great moral victory for Francis Ngannou there. Huge. While we're talking about Jones, I mentioned him just before. He was scheduled this month for his second fight at heavyweight. He's the heavyweight champ now after coming up from light heavyweight. And he just tore his pec in training, and he was going to fight that cat I was just speaking about, Stipe Miocic, who's making a comeback after about 3 years layoff. So that was kind of the two best heavyweights in the world who were going to face off against each other, and that date's now been pushed down the road a little bit. They've swapped that fight out with Alex Pereira, who beat Stylebender at light heavyweight, at middleweight, and came up to light heavyweight once Alex got the win back on him and knocked him out, to fight this other cat, Jiri, for the vacant light heavyweight belt. And that's just been chaos in that division pretty much ever since. Jones is sort of in retirement and training for heavyweight. DC went up to heavyweight. And since then, that belt has just jumped around from person to person. I don't think one person has won it and defended it since. There might have been like one title defense, but essentially that belt just, Jan Błachowicz defended it a couple of times. But essentially that belt just keeps getting passed from contender to contender. So, and this is another sort of spanner in the works. This is going to be a good fight, but to a Brazilian guy versus I think he's like Czechoslovakian or something like that, the other cat, Jiri, or Polish. He's one of those. He's from some other European country. He's a very unconventional fighter. It's going to be a crazy stand-up war. So looking forward to that one, but spewing about the Jones and Stipe fight. And, you know, hopefully Jones recovers fully and can come back and assert his dominance as the heavyweight champ. Even though I'm not a fan of John Jones, I never have been. I'm not a fan of him as a human. I think he's a terrible, terrible person. And in the past, I used to watch fights and want to see him lose. I've moved past that now, and I just want to see him continue to dominate and go out on top, perhaps even have a super fight with Francis Ngannou down the line before they both retire. But and that's just because I enjoy excellence. I enjoy greatness. He's a bad guy, but I don't want to be friends with him. I don't want to invite him around for a dinner party. I just want to see him fight and destroy people because it's exciting. Same reason I like watching guys like Conor McGregor fight. They're exciting. They're super exciting. Sugar Sean O'Malley, exciting. You'll never miss a fight of those guys. The cat that just fought recently, Khamzat Chimaev. These guys are just, I love the, especially when they're undefeated, I love the aura that people can bring to the cage or the octagon. I love the story. I love the bravado. It makes it exciting. You know, people love to hate on Conor McGregor, but how exciting is a Conor McGregor fight? It doesn't get more exciting than that. And I'm watching the sport to be entertained. So I'm all about the big personalities and all the shenanigans that goes on with it. You know, it makes sense to me. It's a crazy sport. There's crazy personalities in there. Let's let them do their thing. And I don't know, I think that you'll miss these kind of guys when they're gone. John Jones, you'll miss him when he's gone. A Stylebender who he's on the verge of retirement, you'll miss him when he's gone. Conor McGregor, the sport will miss him when he's fully retired and he's gone. And, you know, I'm just not into just hating on people because they're doing so much better than the rest of the crowd, and because they're, you know, arrogant or obnoxious or whatever it is. Again, I don't want to be friends with these dudes. I just want to see them perform and entertain us, and that's what they bloody well do. So I'm all about it. What else is going on? Bit of a quiet weekend. We had the kids' first ever blue light disco on Friday night, and we had varying measures of success. I was a bit nervous about dropping Heidi there because she sometimes doesn't like the big crowds and she can kind of bail out of things at the last minute. But she went in with her little friend and they had an absolute ball, and we picked them up and they were always hand in hand smiling and had a big play afterwards for a couple of hours. So that was super rewarding. And then the older kids had their one directly after, and I dropped Shady off, who was super keen to go and excited, until we started lining up to get in. And the chaos, man, it was bloody chaos up there. Just there was no direction. No one knew what was going on. There was kids running around and screaming. There was sort of no real line or anything. It was just a crowd of people milling around the place. And he started getting nervous and more nervous. And then managed to calm him down and get him in there. And as soon as I got home, within about 5 or 10 minutes, the phone rang. He'd called me from his smartwatch and said, I don't like it, Dad. I want to get picked up. It's too loud. I was like, no worries, buddy. I completely understand where you're coming from. Didn't want to pass, you know, my sort of thoughts and insecurities and that I would have had as a kid onto him, let him figure it out on his own. But the result was the same. He wasn't interested. So we picked him up and he just came home. And that is what it is, man. It's funny. He's got some insecurities, the lad. We've worked through a lot of them over the last few years, which is, as a parent, really rewarding to see. You know, sometimes you think, oh, what are we doing wrong? And you know, why can't he be confident and sort of seem carefree like some of the other kids you see around the place? But, man, we've worked through some massive sort of confidence issues and insecurities with him and social issues. And he's just a fairly well-adjusted, happy, polite, kind little boy. He's got a good little group of mates now. So that's super, super rewarding as a parent, but he still has a lot of those insecurities sort of just built into him, you know, for whatever reason. It's in his DNA. He's always wants a hug and always wants to tell you, I love you, Dad, I love you, Mom, and wants to hear you say it back. Like, quite often he'll say it like randomly throughout the day. And that's, you know, we give him all the love he wants, but it's just he needs that constant reassurance, you know. It was funny because he'd been in trouble the other day, and when he gets in trouble, once he's calmed down from whatever kind of behaviour he was doing that got him in trouble in the first place, he reflects a bit, and then you can see him like, oh no, I've messed up here, and, you know, I'm a bad boy. You can see that kind of, that sort of guilt wash over him, and he comes up and, oh, I love you, Dad. I love you, Dad. I'm like real nervous and stuff because he'd been in trouble. And I was like, I love you, mate. I'll always love you. And I tell him this all the time. I said, even when you're being naughty and you're pissing me off, I still love you. I always love you. I said, listen, mate, if you ever grow up and accidentally kill someone, I'm the man you come see. You come see me and I'll hide the body. I'll love you no matter what you do. And he looks at me and goes, with this incredulous look on his face, if I kill someone, what do you mean, Dad? Why would I kill someone? And I was like, not that you're going to kill someone. I just mean, like, if you killed someone, you'd come and tell me and I would still love you. I was like, bad example, dude, bad example. Don't forget I said it. You're a bit too young for that one to make sense to you. I just thought to myself as I walked off, you're an idiot, man. If you kill someone, come and tell me, I'll bury the body. Righto, Dad, psycho. So, but I think I was trying to get the point across that there's nothing you can do. I'll reprimand you when you're acting like a wanker. It's because, you know, we want to correct the behavior and we want other people to like you and you to be a good, positive member of society. If we don't tell you and you're being a dick, you're going to keep being a dick and other people aren't going to like you. But no matter how much of a dick you are, sometimes I'll always love you. I'm your dad. Same with your mum. So I think that's massively important for kids to know, because we get caught up sometimes when they're pissing us off and being naughty and not listening and we're tired and run down with just like, sometimes you get stuck into them, you know, and then that sticks with them. And you know, it's just important to balance the ship again and go, look, man, you pissed me off, but I freaking love you anyway. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you do. Buddy, come tell me if you accidentally kill someone. I'll get rid of the body. We'll sort it out together. That's what I meant. Anyway. But yeah, bit of a quiet, boring weekend. We went for a big swim yesterday. You know, there's some people down the road from us who very, very kindly offered to let us use the pool while they were away for a couple of weeks. So we've been going down there over a weekend. The kids have gone down with Mum a couple of times during the week and had a nice swim. Which is, you know, so good because the port pools here are so busy on the weekend, especially because South's closed and now they're doing water polo there and swimming lessons and every man and his dog goes down there on a weekend and it's just bloody hectic. So to have this pool literally, you know, half a kilometre away, if that, was great. We can just cruise down there, go for a swim, kick back for a little bit, you know, and then come home. So super appreciative of the family that let us use their pool while they're away. You know, we certainly are the kind of people we say hello and have a chat when we see them out and about, but we don't hang out or anything like that. So it's not like we're close friends and they said use the pool. So it was super generous of them to kind of let us use that pool while they're away, and very, very appreciative of it. Been great timing too. But yeah, because besides that, it's been a bit of a boring sort of clean up the yard, clean up the house, do a few jobs around the place. Kids on the iPad a bit, which I always feel super guilty about. But, yeah, speaking of iPads, We just got a new one for Heidi recently because hers has been buggered for about 3 years. The battery's been knackered on it. We've been putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And got her a new iPad, which she's stoked about. And it's just funny, like, you know those things that you buy and you know you spend so much money on them. It's like $1,000 to buy outright. You spend so much money on them and you know you're spending so much money on it when they give you like expensive packaging and you take the thing out of the package and it's all like it fits together well and it folds down nicely and it's like smooth when you pull the product out of it and it's got like little compartments inside for the extras and you're like, this packaging seems like it's too good to throw out. I feel like I should be keeping this somewhere. And sometimes you do. You keep like your iPhone or your iPad like box in like a drawer or a cupboard somewhere, like as if you're going to need it on a rainy day or you're going to, you know, off-sell it again to someone else one day. And it's so crazy with our technology that it just doesn't work like that. If you spend $1,000 on an item for your house, maybe a vacuum or a couch or a table and chairs or whatever it is, you have in the back of your mind, there's an intent that you're going to be able to on-sell this sometime in the future and probably get decent money for it if you look after it. If there was packaging for it, you'd keep it. But you pay $1,000 for an iPad and a year and a half from now, you're going to get absolutely peanuts for it. You might be able to sell it for a couple of hundred if it's in really good condition, or you trade it in and get, you know, a bit of money off your next item, but they just lose value. So there's no point keeping this beautiful, nice, expensive packaging. And you're also thinking, this is $50 worth of packaging here, $40 worth of packaging, like the craftsmanship and everything in it, it's expensive. So how much money are you making off me if you can afford to give me this in this package? It's the same with my minimalist wallet I got for my birthday and my like smart keyring thing. The package it comes in was so nice and I've like kept it for a few weeks and I was cleaning out the closet the other day. Eminem would be proud. I was cleaning out my closet and I found the box for it and stuff. I'm like, why am I keeping this? I'm not going to repackage this thing ever. I need to get rid of the expensive, nice packaging. I'm not going to be a guy that like obsesses over and hoards nice packaging. But it is crazy to me that they spend so much money on it. It's like, okay, how much is the product actually worth for what I paid? Because, you know, you're throwing in this packaging here that I don't even need. You could give it to me in just a foam bag with some bubble wrap and we could save a bit of money between us, you know? But I guess that's not how the bloody world works. It's capitalist society for you, hey? Consumerism. We're all bloody victim to it. We're all using iPhones and shit made unethically in third world countries. And we're not really doing a whole lot to change it. I'm certainly not going to change it. I would like it if they did it a different way. And if they changed it, it would. I'm not even going to say it's going to help me sleep better at night because it's not keeping me up, but it would be a nice little cherry on top to know that we were doing these things in an ethical and sustainable way. But we're not, and we're all part of it. So I guess that's just one of the realities of capitalist society in 2023, eh? What about some good news? Some good news would be... actually haven't read right into this yet and I probably need to before I go too far down the rabbit hole on it, but I'll at least mention it that the ACT have passed legislation to decriminalize drugs, meaning there's no jail time or time on your record for offenders that get caught with drugs on them, you know, to up to a certain amount. So you can get caught with any drug on you and the police aren't going to arrest you. It's not going to go on your record. They'll confiscate the drugs and I think there's a fine or whatever. But, you know, no court date. No, it's like getting a speeding fine. You get a speeding fine, or you get a ticket, you pay for the ticket because you broke the law, but it's decriminalized, which I think is a huge step in the right direction. I'm sure some people would disagree with me there, but you know, it means they're going to target the drug traffickers instead, and they're the people that you need to be going after, the ones that are making huge amounts of money on it, risking people's lives and just blatantly flaunting laws, and you know, they're the big movers. They're the guys you need to be, if drugs are still illegal, they're the guys you need to be going after. Personally, I would hope that eventually one day we actually go down the pathway of, like, I think it's Portugal, maybe some other states as well. I don't think they've done it in the states anywhere yet. They've just decriminalized. But I'm sure, certainly Portugal and maybe Uruguay, maybe Spain. There's certainly some countries that have gone down the decriminalisation or legalisation and regulation of drugs, meaning, you know, there's no black market anymore, which is another conversation on its own, which we could delve into probably another day and go right down the rabbit hole on. But I mean, this whole war on drugs is a complete failure. I'm not the first person to say this. I'm sure you've heard other people talking about this on, you know, read about it and heard podcasts and opinion pieces and whatnot on it. But I've heard those same conversations and podcasts and arguments, and I wholeheartedly agree that the war on drugs is a complete failure. All you're doing is propping up, you know, especially in the United States, you're propping up a black market south of their border, which is a billion, like multi-billion dollar industry where lives and homes and families and towns and everything are ruined, destroyed by the way these businesses operate, these illegal drug cartels operate. And the drugs are still getting onto the streets anyway. And now they're getting dirty drugs. So they're getting like fentanyl mixed in with them, and people are overdosing off what should just be a casual amount of, you know, ecstasy or cocaine, or people have taken other pills now, like opioid style pills and all this sort of stuff, and they're making them south of the border. People don't know what they're taking. They've got fentanyl in them, and it's killing a lot of people, like 100,000 people a year in the States. It's a huge problem. It's not as big over here, but I mean, we're still propping up those industries, the black market, which is just crazy, you know, when you think the drugs are out there anyway. There's other countries that have legalized it, regulated it, and shown that with education and regulation and making it safe, you can combat the use of drugs in a far more efficient and effective way. You know, this is kind of just, it's like that, it's like the sunk cost. I've tried to talk about this theory before and I always forget what it's called, the sunk cost concept or whatever, where you've put so much time and effort and money into a failed project that you just keep piling it in because you're so far down the road, instead of cutting your losses, pulling out and going in a different direction. And the drugs are on the street. They're harder to get in Australia, certainly, probably not in places like Sydney or Melbourne and you know, the other side of the country, but in Perth they're harder to get, but they're still there. People are still buying them, and they're buying shitty, half-cut, you know, dodgy street drugs where you could be regulating these things. I mean, you can buy heroin, you can buy opiates through the pharmaceutical countries. That's regulated. They're now starting to do medicinal cannabis. But essentially, you could regulate all drugs, take the black market away, make sure the drugs that people are getting are safe, and then concentrate on education. You know, this is why you shouldn't be using X amount of this drug. It ruins lives, does this to your body. Show, you know, teach people what drugs do, and at least people are going to be getting safe drugs that way. And I know there's a lot of nuance in that discussion, and there's a lot of things that would need to be worked out and hashed out. But at the end of the day, people are taking drugs, they're dying, and we're propping up billion-dollar cartel industries anyway. And I don't think that's the best way to go about it, you know. And the other countries have shown that they don't have increased uses of drug addiction and overdose and all that. And they've got less people in prisons due to drug-related offences. So it's like a net benefit overall. And there'd be an adjustment period, no doubt, where there's, you know, the country's getting used to it as a culture of how to deal with having more drugs in circulation, but they'd be clean and you'd be regulated. The government would be making money off them. You'd know where you're getting them from. You'd have to get a prescription like anything else. And it's, you know, it's regulated. I just think that in a smart society who was, you know, wasn't so politically captured over issues like drugs, it was more about what's the actual best way to deal with this for the people. It just seems like the smart option. One day maybe we can live in a world where that happens, but, you know, it kind of seems like the world's going simultaneously in that direction as far as trials with psilocybin, ketamine and some other psychoactive or psychedelic drugs for treatment of depression and PTSD and all and other mental illnesses and breaking addiction and stuff, and medicinal cannabis. We're kind of going down that pathway with one foot, and then the other foot we're going down more regulation, more control of the people and the populations on the other foot. So it's like, which direction are we kind of going to commit to? It's kind of crazy. I was chatting to a fella last night, very smart guy, more worldly and more educated than myself. And he was talking about the fact that, you know, we are in bed with China and we probably need to nurture that relationship on one hand, because that's where our economy is tied into. But the same hand, it's like I understand what he means about that. You know, economically, where we are and how much we rely on them, and it's good to keep that relationship strong, and how much land they already own and businesses they already own in Australia. But at the same time, it's like, well, we don't want to be the communist, the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, where the people there have, you know, minimal rights. They really kind of do whatever they want to the people over there. So it's like it's a scary road to go down. Yeah, yeah. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Keep a good relationship economically, but let's not follow suit with those kind of guys and go to a socialist style government where the people have less say. And certainly drugs are heavily restricted and penalized in countries like that, because populations that have, you know, freer use of drugs, especially psychedelics and psychoactive drugs like that, they tend to have more autonomy and freedom of thought and critical thinking, and they tend to not want to go along with the wagon as easily, you know, not led by the wagon, but the wagon's not led by the horse as easily. So I don't know, there's some conflicting ideas, not just in Australia but worldwide, currently going on around drugs and the use of them. Seems the medical world's on board as far as trials and treating depression and mental illness, as we just spoke about. But then, you know, when the big dollars and the powers that be and the people that want to control populations get involved, you know, how much sway do they have, and what do they think about that direction? So I don't know, there's a huge, exciting, interesting, hopeful sort of space to watch there, and I just hope that we continue to move down the right direction, you know, and hopefully not too slowly either. It'd be nice to see cannabis legal in Australia by 2030, like it is in Canada now, like it is in many states in the US. If they've got medicinal cannabis throughout most states, and then it's legal in a good handful of states as well. So it'd be nice to see us follow suit there. It just seems like we're so slow with the regulation. Even speaking to Dr. Matty Moore last time round, he was talking about the CBD, which is the non-psychoactive component to cannabis that you get for inflammation and seizures and anxiety and a bunch of other conditions. It's non-psychoactive. It's not harmful to the body, and it's now legal in Australia, but it's not FDA approved, so we're still years away from being able to buy it over the counter. So it's not cost effective for people. So it's just frustrating, all the red tape and stuff, because you know, lives are involved, and lives are at stake, and lives are being ruined and compromised in the meantime, when there's things like, medicinal cannabis and CBD and psilocybin mushrooms and all these things that could be used. By all scientific research so far could be used really, really effectively and positively for people with mental illnesses, and even just for what they call healthy normals, just for better quality of life for the people that are sort of in the healthy normal range. So frustrating, but also hopeful and exciting. Or hopeful and excited to see what happens in that whole space over the next, you know, 10 years or so. And I can understand if you're against that point of view at face value, but when you're really, like people are at face value, because we've been conditioned since like the 50s, you know, our parents and our grandparents have been conditioned to think that drugs are just bad, there's been a lot of propaganda, untruthful propaganda around what drugs do and the use of drugs and on people. And it's kind of just in our subconscious now. It's in our psyche. But then you ask those people who disagree with me on it, well, what about alcohol? Alcohol is a drug, and it is quite a potent one. And it's got a swath of negative, hugely negative effects on people and on populations and on society. And alcoholism is rampant, and there's drink driving, and there's violence, and there's all sorts of shit going on. And we use it casually in the home in front of our kids. And even if you don't drink, I doubt you think it should be illegal. Not many people think that. We think that adults, informed adults, should be able to make the choice as to what they put in their own bodies. You know what I mean? You can eat all the sugar you want. You can eat all the sugar you want, become a diabetic, become obese, have a heart attack, get heart disease, which is one of the number one killers of Australians. You can do all that legally. No one's going to say a damn thing to you. You can drink alcohol because you've been, you know, informed of the risks of, about it. The government regulates it. They tax it. You buy it off their vendors and their approved vendors. And we're all happy with that. You know, cigarettes is another one. But when you talk about other drugs, that a lot of these are not as harmful as alcohol. You could argue that amphetamine is, but that's regulated already anyway for ADH medicine, ADD or ADHD medicine. Heroin, another one of the big ones, that's widely used and regulated for pain medication and other conditions. This, when you're really left with, you know, what you'd be cleaning up is street heroin, meth and methamphetamine, and you're really left with some of the more mundane ones like marijuana, weed. Doesn't kill anybody. Yeah, it ruins people's lives. They get lazy. Some people, sure. Some people become alcoholics and ruin their life like that. Some people become obese and get fucking diabetes and heart disease and ruin their lives like that from eating food. You know, so yeah, some people are going to ruin their life with it. But once you're an adult, you should be able to make those choices about what you put in your body. And if you're going out on amphetamine, breaking the law because you're all amped up, then you get arrested because you broke a law. But if you take amphetamines and you don't hurt anybody and you go about your normal day, you might not be doing the best thing for your own body in the long run, but that's should be your choice to make. You know what I mean? I don't understand how we're so far removed from that argument as you should be in control of what you put in your body. We are over several other substances already, but then as soon as we start talking about weed, psychedelics, all of a sudden, and really it's just those two. As soon as we start talking about those, well, no, you can't do that. But you can have heroin, you just need a prescription. You can have amphetamine, you just need a prescription. But you can't have psilocybin mushroom, perhaps have a mystical experience and change your outlook on life and maybe kick alcohol addiction and become a kinder person. You can't do that just because. Who's had an overdose and died from mushrooms? Well, no one. Have people had psychotic breaks from a bad mushroom or LSD trip? Probably. Have people had psychotic breaks from smoking too much marijuana? Probably, yeah. Have people had mental breakdowns and ruined their lives from drinking alcohol? Definitely, yeah. So, you know, when you really weigh the two arguments up against each other, it doesn't make sense that we're holding on to the old way of thinking built on propaganda and control. Substances like psychedelics have been used throughout other cultures. And again, these aren't my original thoughts. I'm regurgitating what I've heard many other people speak about. But I agree with this wholeheartedly. They've been used by other cultures, not typically known as warring dysfunctional cultures, hunter-gatherer cultures who existed, you know, subsidiary lifestyles for thousands of years. That was always part of their traditions. And then all of a sudden we've made it bad and X'd it out and told your grandparents and your parents and us and our kids that it's bad for you and you can't have it anymore. And we all just went, oh, okay, yeah, it's probably bad for you. Oof. Is it? Give us the information, give us the education on it, make an age limit, 18, 21, whatever it is, and let's let people make their own choices in life and see how we bloody go with it. That's my wholehearted, strong opinion on that. Probably not a widespread opinion, but I think a lot of people, if they stop and look at those two arguments like that, side by side, you can at least see the logic in where I'm coming from. It's not just a crack-brained idea. So, pardon the pun. Yeah, because, and again, just touching on it, like deaths from drugs, like you're talking overdoses, typically street drugs, a lot of the time fentanyl, hot-shotted, you know, things like, you know, hot-shotted street drugs and whatnot, and heroin, and, you know, and opiate overdoses, which again is already legalized, that's already regulated, so that's kind of moot point there. And that's kind of funny, that whole overdose thing. I was thinking about this the other day, like fentanyl. I don't know if you've ever seen the graphic where they show you how much fentanyl can kill you next to how much heroin would kill you. And these are tiny, tiny amounts of the substance. Like if you put imagine your fingernail, it'd be like a little pile taking up an eighth of your fingernail that is enough fentanyl to kill you. And I just look at that and think, how does that, happen? How can such a tiny little, like a amount of something, which is effectively a poison, how can that take down the entire human body, like the whole biological system? It's so crazy. Like, you think about how much food we put into our bodies, and you know, you need a lot of food to run the machine. You got to eat typically three times a day. You know, you got to get all the right stuff in there, and you can eat in another few hours. If you have some bad food, you crook for a few hours or a day, you get it through your system, you move on with it. But a tiny amount of fentanyl in your, look at how big your body is, and you imagine that spread out through your whole bloodstream. Like that, enough, a tiny amount of that is enough to shut you down and kill you. Pretty crazy how that works. I've never quite understood how that works. How a tiny amount of poison can take over the whole body and shut it down like that. Yeah, I guess I'm using it as like looking at it next to food as the analogy, which probably doesn't make sense. But to me, I find it hard to get my head around that. How that works. What a weird machine we are. Like, if you put a tiny little bit of the wrong fuel, like a bottle cap full of the wrong fuel in your car, it might run like shit while it gets through that tank of fuel, and then you're probably going to be all right. But, you know, if it's a human, if we were like humans, if the cars were like humans and you put a bottle cap of the wrong fuel in your car, the whole thing would explode, conk out on the side of the road. Pretty crazy, eh? Pretty bloody crazy. Anyway, moving on from that. I've been having a few wins and failures with online shopping lately. Like, just clothes, man. The sizing of clothes is so, like, it should be objective, but it's subjective. It's like different suppliers make the same size clothes that are actually a different size, because, you know, I know what size I am based on the clothes I've got in my closet, cupboard. I've been listening to too much American shit. I keep saying closet, cupboard, wardrobe. And then when I get them out, order them, get them out from online, and then, like, some of these sizes aren't fitting me. I'm like, oh, what the hell, man? So luckily the returns system online is pretty bloody good now, pretty effective, pretty quick. You know, you email them back, say, doesn't fit. They send you through like a barcode thing, you print that off, you reship the thing back to them, you got to pay for postage again. But I've had some pretty quick turnarounds, like got something out in the mail within a couple of weeks, tried it on too big, emailed the people, straight away sent me through a returns folder, a return slip, packaged it up the next day, sent it back, and then within another 2 weeks, I've got my new pants out. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, it's just frustrating, the whole size thing. Like, I feel like I'm an in-betweener, because I'm tall and lean, so I've got long legs but a thin waist. So like a 30, which I have kind of been wearing the last couple of years, is really too small for me. Like, I can wear it and fit it and you know, get on with my day, but the buttons pop off sometimes, like, because it's a bit tight and they're a little bit short. Like, they're okay with work boots on, because the work boots are quite big and they come up quite high, but really if I was wearing normal shoes or whatever, they're a bit short in the leg. And then I get the 34 and they're hanging off me, and I got to wear a belt, and it kind of bunches up around the waistline. I'm like, well, that's not right. A 30 can't be too small, and then a 34 is kind of too big. Like, I'm pretty picky with my clothes. I do want them to fit well, which I think when you're paying $50, $60 for a pair of pants is okay. You should be able to expect them to fit well and be comfortable. So I feel like I'm an in-betweener. Like, I'm a 31. No, I'm not a 32. Sorry, I've been buying 32s, and then I don't fit which is tight, and I don't fit the 34s. I think I said 30 before. So I'm kind of like a 33. I need them sort of tightish around, a bit tighter around the waist, a bit longer in the leg, but not as long and big as the 34s, not as short and tight as the 30, 32s. So, like, clothes companies should make in-between sizes. Like, I'm an in-betweener. What is with that, man? And, you know, as I said, I'm pretty picky with it. I like things to fit. But it's the same with my shirts as well. Sometimes I get a medium, fits perfectly, you know, walk around and this is the perfect size shirt for me. Then you get a medium from another company, a different kind of shirt, and it's hanging off you. I think, oh, what the bloody hell? So then you get a large. You get a large from one company and you go, this fits perfect. This is exactly how it's supposed to hang on me. I'm 6 foot, nearly 6 foot one, so large makes sense. But then I get a large in another brand, and it's just hanging off me. I'm swimming in it. I'm like, oh, it's just, what? It's so subjective, and it should be objective. It should be one size. A size should be a size. But I don't know where they get their. Yeah, I don't know what the standard is. There's no standard. It's kind of like a guide. So buying clothes online can be kind of dubious in that manner. And again, I am kind of OCD with it. You know, it's too short, it's too loose, too long, it's too tight. It's, you know, it doesn't fit quite right around the shoulders. You know, so I am picky. But you should be able to spend good money on good clothes and then look good, feel good. So definitely an in-betweener, man. Speaking of in-between, one thing that shouldn't be in-between is socks, right? I've got a pet hate on socks that are, like, where people wear them sort of halfway up. They're like a longer crew-style sock, and they wear them, like, half hanging down, halfway down their shin. That just messes with my OCD. Hey, socks have got to be all the way down, or all the way up. And really, if you want them to be all the way down, you should be wearing low cut socks. And if you want them to be all the way up, you wear long socks. That's the way I run. And I'm even so OCD that I think I hate the, then this probably comes from having the skinny ankles, why I'm so picky, but I hate like the ankle socks where just that half an inch or an inch of it sticks out the top of your shoes. I'm like, if you want to go low cut socks, you get the invisible socks where they go down around your ankle. If you want them to stick up, you get them to stick up. I'm all about in-betweeners when it comes to pants and shirts. When it comes to socks, I'm a all the way down, all the way up guy. It's a pet bloody hate of mine. Pet bloody hate. What else going on? House sitter. Yeah, we're spending a bit of time down in Perth over the Chrissy break, a bit longer than usual, and we had teed up to house sit for someone in Yanchep, right around the corner from my sister's house. She's like, a dog there, they need to be looked after. We wanted to take the van down and park it up somewhere. And it worked out perfect. We found them on a Facebook site for house sitting in Perth. And it was perfect, right where we wanted to be. House sit, good amount of time over Christmas. And, you know, they win, we win. Perfect. Locked it in. And about a month or two ago. And then like a week ago, she pulls out and says, oh, sorry, we don't need a house sitter anymore. And it's like, oh, so now we're in the hunt for a house to house sit again. And it's too late. Like, all the houses on these housing sites are like taken. So she kind of stitched us up there. And if you are in the Perth region, you know someone that's going away over Christmas and wants someone to look after the house, or even just doesn't mind letting someone pull the van up there for a bit, let us know. Shout out to me, because we don't even need to use the house. We would just feed the dog, or just really park up the van up out the front and have somewhere to plug it in and keep it charged and that. Because, you know, staying at family's houses, you kind of feel in the way a little bit, and you kind of don't have your own space, and you feel obliged to always do stuff with them because you're at their house. It's nice to have your own space, mate. So yeah, we kind of definitely got stitched up there in the hunt for another house to house sit over Christmas, pet sit if needed. Otherwise, just house sit, yeah. So, problems. First world problems, eh? Yes. Life's full of little problems, mate. We all know that. Life's actually been pretty tough at the moment, you know. Probably part of the reason why I haven't been super consistent with the podcast, because when you're kind of copping it from a bunch of different sides and you're just keeping your head above water, you know, and quite often, you know, clinging to a thread, and when that thread snaps, you find another one to cling to and just manage to keep your head up above water and keep going through and doing it all. You know, it's hard to find the motivation to come and do something like this, but for me, it really is important to keep the podcast going. I feel better after I do it. It's super cathartic for me. But, you know, to come in here and bring the right kind of energy where I'm engaging and talking about interesting things that I'm excited about and hopefully excite and interest you guys, it can be hard to do that when you're having a rough week and you're burnt out and you're worn down and, you know, you stack a bunch of rough weeks on top of each other, and that kind of does really become a bit of a slug. But I am just trying to continue to do the right things, like make time for this podcast, like look after myself, you know, my physical well-being, and I'm certainly not really doing a whole lot of social stuff and making time for that side of my life at the moment. It's just hard with multiple commitments going on to do that, but I'm trying to do the right things and follow my own advice, because I often give advice to blokes who are going through a rough time about in my opinion, the importance of continuing to do the basics and making things you know are important and are good for you priorities, even when you don't feel like doing them, even when you feel like shit, because there's nothing worse than seeing somebody going through a rough time. They're down, they're really going through it, and then they start neglecting other areas of their life, which then begin to suffer. And then, you know, you come through the set of problems that originally got you down, as we all do. You know, everything, you know, the saying, this too shall pass, everything passes. You come through the set of circumstances that got you down in the first place, and then you neglected all these other parts of your life, and you got a whole other set of problems that have been created in the meantime. So I'm really big on looking after the main things and the priorities, even when you're going through it. And I'm just really kind of working hard at taking my own advice with that sort of stuff at the moment. Like, it's probably one of the reasons why I am sort of, you know, obsessed with physical exercise, like with going to the gym and working out and keeping my my health as a, yeah, as top priority. Like, because I feel like it's one of the few things in life I actually have a reliable measure of control over. You know, there's illusion of control in our lives quite often, and it only takes a few pieces of the puzzle to fall apart, or fall out, or to get lost, or to things to go astray that are outside of your control, for you to realize how little control we really do have over a lot of situations that we told ourselves we had control over. So even though I'm getting older and things will typically happen to your body as you get older that are out of your control, there's a lot of your health and fitness and physical well-being is in your control. So I guess I really lean into that and go, well, this is something I can't control. I'm going to damn well make a good crack at keeping myself healthy. So it's kind of an obsession for me, I guess, but it's like a healthy obsession. You know, you put all this time and effort into it, and the end result is you're getting fitter and healthier and stronger. So that's like a good fallout from an obsession, because, you know, you could be obsessed or addicted to a lot of other things that have negative fallouts. So look, the health thing is staying on track, but I could definitely be, between you and me, and I've preached about this recently, I could definitely be better with the diet lately. I'm typically like an 80 or 90% on, 10 to 20% off kind of guy as far as the way I eat, but it's probably slipped down to around 70-30 lately. Started drinking during the week again, which I will get on top of this week. So Monday, tomorrow, I'm saying it publicly on the podcast, this week no alcohol during the week. That was one thing that was definitely working well for me, keeping me on the straight and narrow during the working week, and then relaxing, having a few drinks on the weekend. But the last 2 weeks, it's just been drinking every night again. And again, that's one of those things that just make your other problems harder to deal with in the next day when you get up. So, and it's funny, you know that, and you know what you're doing, and you just kind of do it anyway. And then that's like a little failure. And you do that a few days in a row. You do that in a few areas of your life. Well, I should do this, but I won't do it. I shouldn't do this, but I will do it. And nothing drastic happens. But, you know, a month later, you got all these little losses stacked on top of each other, and you kind of feeling like a bit of a piece of shit. So definitely time to start stacking some little wins back on top of each other, and getting through my weeks feeling a bit better about myself, because, you know, we're certainly rougher on ourselves than we are on other people, and I'm a victim of that. You know, I'm guilty of that as well. So yeah, trying to do the right things. Need to get the diet back on track a bit. Think even things like that hard solo. I just finished drinking one. Like, I don't drink that much sugar. I don't drink soft drink. But I'm going out and buying those hard solos because it's an alcoholic drink that's sweet and sugary and easy to drink. And it's like, do I really need to do that? Drink two of those on a Saturday, two of those on a Sunday. That's an extra whatever. Like, I don't think they tell you how much sugar's in these things because it's alcohol, but that's probably an extra 50 grams of sugar in my diet I just didn't need. While I'm drinking that and tricking my body into thinking I'm just having a normal drink, but it's alcohol, when I could just have an actual beer and be honest with myself with what I'm doing. So there's those little things, mate. I haven't been eating liver lately, which I actually think's having an effect on the energy levels. So those small things I need to start getting back on track. I did buy online a big tub of that Vital Greens. I don't know if any of you guys have used it. You've probably, if you listen to podcasts, you've probably heard the Athletic Greens AG1 adverts all over the place, which I heard, and the great super supplement and all this sort of stuff. And I do love a good supplement. So I started looking into them, and man, it is expensive, like really expensive, like hundreds of dollars for a 30 or 60 day supply or something. I was like, well, damn, I'm not spending that. And then I Googled around and found there's an Australian brand that's got the basically an identical ingredients list, 72 different ingredients of all vital, you know, nutrients and minerals and everything in them for at least half the price. So I bought a big tub of it. It comes in a powder form, and I thought, you beauty, this is going to be my new daily routine, and I'll get it into the kids, and I'll feel better about their, you know, nutrient intake and all this. And then, man, I had a glass of it, and it's not disgusting, but it's not good. And it's kind of hard to, it's a very strong flavor, and it kind of fills you up a little bit. So I'm like, oh man, when am I going to have this? It's not something I want to have first thing in the morning, and then kind of get that, like, you want to burp it up, but it's kind of thick. And then I hid it in the kids' smoothies, and they were straight away like, what's in this, Dad? It's a funny color. It smells funny. And I've had to be much more crafty. I got it into their smoothie this morning, but like a lesser amount and a larger quantity of smoothie. So like diluting it down a fair bit, that worked out well. But even me, I'm only having it a couple of times a week because it's quite intense. So I'd be, if anybody's having that stuff and they found a good way to get it into your diet without sort of been so abrasive, I'd like to hear your thoughts, because definitely good for you, definitely not super easy to incorporate into the diet. So be interested to hear how other people, if they're taking Vital Greens or something like it, how they're getting that into their diet in an easy way. Look, that's 56 minutes. I reckon I'll grab the speaker and chuck a couple of tracks on just to wind this thing down. A couple of songs I came across this week. They are of the sort of country ballad type style. A fellow that I never heard before, I just saw a clip of him on Instagram and then found him on Spotify and started listening to a couple of his tracks. Dylan Gossett. I'll play, that's Dylan Gossett, not Gossip. I'll play one of his tracks, Cole, for you in a second. And then after that, I'll go straight into Shane Smith and the Saints, who's one of my favourite bands. So good. If you like ballad type rock, if you like country, if you like that honky tonk, you know, if you like guys like Chris Stapleton and Zach Bryan, you'll probably like Shane Smith and the Saints. And their new track, Adeline, I've been vibing on this week as well. So I'm going to play those on the way out and then call it a week. And then we will be back next weekend with another episode. I think next weekend will just be me. The weekend after that, I've got a guest kind of come on who's a return guest I'm excited about. So here we go. Dylan Gossett, Cole, and then Shane Smith and the Saints, Adeline. Thanks for your time. Appreciate your listening. Go onto that Facebook page, Instagram page. Follow, tell your mates, get them to listen to it, subscribe, definitely subscribe to the podcast on Spotify or wherever you listen to it, and let's continue to build those numbers up. Appreciate you all. Average Man, episode number 167. What was it? Balls of Steel. Peace.
I remember once you told me, said drinking was unholy. So Lord, can you point me to the creek? And I still keep it with me, tucked under all the memories. Your voice echoing throughout those trees. And through unfavored weather and holes in the leather, these boots still covered in tar. Well, I'm still praying to the heavens and hoping for them sevens, but hope only gets a man so far. When this game of life plays heavy on my heart, and love is tough, but loneliness is twice as hard. Carry that about everywhere I go, and they say, pray. I've seen heaven without dying, met the devil without trying, and they both seem to want to talk to me. But I'm all out of luck now, and my dreams aren't worth a buck. How it's tough trying to land on my feet when this game of life plays heavy on my heart. And love is tough, but loneliness is twice as hard. And I'll carry that about everywhere I go. They say pressure makes diamonds. How the hell am I still cold? And every day it's getting colder since that day in October when he told me it was over, so I left. 'Cause if you need me, well, I told you I'm on the better side of sober, trying to find a four-leaf clover to get me out of this mess. This game of life plays heavy on my heart, and love is tough, loneliness is twice as hard, and I'll carry that bell everywhere I go. And they say pressure makes diamonds. How the hell? This game of life plays heavy on my heart, and love is tough.
How the hell am I still cold? It's a full moon, it's shining like the truth, and I'm gonna see it through somehow. It don't feel right. I was born with good intentions, and I'm begging for your wisdom right now. Had a lie, I should have been fine by now, but I'm facing what we have. It's in the yeah. that you hold me.